Senate and House bills regarding children's nutrition send the message, we care enough to prevent hunger, but not enough to prevent diabetes. This is a quote I found on ChefAnn.com, one of a few websites that today's guest, Ann Cooper, has put together to spread the word that today's industrialized nutrition is causing great and many problems for our youth. At this present time, Ann is Nutrition Services Director for the Boulder Valley School District. It's no wonder her previous life as a five-star chef, board member of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Organic Standards, and public speaker to raise awareness about the true value of food has led her to this point. We could all sit around and scratch our heads wondering why she's considered a renegade, but let's hear some of what she's got to say instead. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Anne, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So another renegade hits Boulder. You came from Berkeley, though, so maybe you'll be showing us a few things here.
Well, you know, Berkeley, Boulder, some ways they're very similar.
Yes, yes. I know that quote was not yours, that was off of your website, but it does represent the problem that we face in feeding our children. Do you agree? Or
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. I mean, I think the USDA is just not making our children's health in schools a priority. You know, we get $2 this year, $2.72 reimbursement rate. So for me to feed a child in school, I get $2.72 to do that. Of that, about a dollar goes to food. Now think about that. Trying to feed our children delicious, nutritious, healthy food. You have to include milk. You have to include fruit. And oh, by the way, it has to be 750 calories. All for a dollar. It's almost impossible.
And do you think that it's realistic, first of all, to have a number of calories as one of the pieces that you have to adhere to?
Well, you know, the reason we have this minimum level of calories is because a lot of these guidelines came up during World War II when there were not enough recruits to actually go in the army. So we were too malnourished to fight. Now, of course, we're too fat to fight. Now the whole story. But
all of this is a good thing after all.
Yeah, right. But what I think is that we shouldn't have this idea about minimum. It all comes down to numbers. We need to stop talking about numbers and start talking about real food. We need to feed kids fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, whole grains, and healthy protein. That's what we need to serve kids.
Right. Now, you did begin your work with school nutrition in the late 90s in East Hampton, if I've read correctly, and now you're in Boulder, Colorado via Berkeley, California. Can you give us a look into how you see the progress? What was it first like? And East Hampton also is a wealthy community, but...
Well, I think in sort of the big picture, we've come so far in 10 years. I started about a decade ago. And 10 years ago, almost no one but a small group of advocates were really talking about school food. No one really knew. I'm not sure they really cared. But now, 10 years later, we have the First Lady with her Let's Move campaign. We have Jamie Oliver with his reality TV show. And you just can't listen to NPR or read a newspaper or look at the blogs without seeing something about school food. So in 10 years, we've really started to come to grips with the fact that what we serve our kids in school is often very unhealthy and sometimes makes them sick.
Well, it's no secret around these parts, and certainly is with the Tributaries listeners, that, you know, in that quote, it states that the government or the powers that be are interested in preventing hunger, but feeding the diet that we feed children does not even begin to prevent hunger. You might be stuffing someone's face with something, but that's the reason why people want a snack, is the fact that they're not being fed the nutrients they need.
Well, I think that's true. You know, the National School Lunch Program allows chicken nuggets, tater tots, chocolate milk with high fructose corn syrup, Pop-Tarts, canned fruit cocktail, high fructose corn syrup. I mean, just over and over and over what we're allowed to feed kids. I mean, that's what the government says is okay. And that is not okay. And I think oftentimes, because we keep talking about the numbers, you know, how many calories and what percent of this and what percent of that, we've lost a discussion around food. I mean, we need to move away from nutrients and go back to real whole foods.
Now, if you look at the norm, Boulder is not quite the norm, I would say, through the country. But what parts of or what needs to change do you see that don't necessarily need funding, where you could actually be in any community and see a change happen?
You know, change can happen without additional funding, but we cannot fix school food without additional funding and guidelines, because the money's not enough. I mean, when the guidelines allow things like chicken nuggets and tater tots to be served every day, you have to pair the two. But there are things you can do. I mean, we can trade milk that's got RGBH and all kinds of stuff in it for just at least RGBH-free, hormone-free, antibiotic-free milk. You could start with that. You could put a salad bar in a school. You could switch to more whole grains. You could get rid of the fresh fruit cocktail. I mean, we could get rid of the fruit cocktail and go to fresh fruit. So there were things you can do, but even switching from canned fruit cocktail with high fructose corn syrup to fresh fruit can cost 10 or 15 or 20 cents just to do that one thing. So it is hard, and money is part of the crux of it.
Is it common knowledge that it's the high corn fructose that is causing diabetes? I mean, do these people know that are actually working out what schools have to have in their school programs?
Well, I do not believe that the USDA would say that high fructose corn syrup is the cause of diabetes. I think the Corn Refiners Association, you know, is working really hard to make sure no one really says that. But it's clear that the change in how we eat and the composition of the foods that we eat is absolutely contributing to obesity and diabetes in our country.
So tell us about the Lunchbox program. You just mentioned that, and I know you got it rolling, and it seems fantastic. Is it being utilized also as you would like to see it being utilized?
Well, you know, my day job is being Director of Nutrition Services for Boulder Valley. Additionally, I have a foundation, the Food Family Farming Foundation, and the premier project of the foundation is the Lunchbox, Healthy Tools for All Schools. So we've raised a little over $1 million, and we're putting all of that money into the Lunchbox, www.thelunchbox.org, where we have menus and recipes and guidelines and videos, and it's really being started to be used. In fact, I was just told yesterday that we get more hits on the Lunchbox sites than Michelle Obama gets on letsmove.gov, so I thought that was interesting. The other project we're working on right now is the Salad Bar Project. So we're collaborating with Whole Foods to put salad bars in 300-400 schools right now. In our first week, we raised over $180,000. We're hoping to raise $1 million. And after that, $1 million and $1 million. And my goal with that project is to put a salad bar in every school in America.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. Now, the Lunchbox program is not, you know, as a mother, I could go there and find out some good recipes. But you also are, in a way, weaning yourself out of a job.
I would love to put myself out of a job. If school districts and advocates all across the country started to use the Lunchbox and started to make positive change and started to cook from scratch and started to get rid of processed foods, I would love to retire. And the faster, the better.
Well, why don't you explain a little bit more about what is actually on the Lunchbox program that a school district could go in and look at and actually utilize?
There's recipes, and the recipes are explodable by elementary and secondary portions. They also include the child nutrition CN equivalents, which is really important, as well as nutritionals. You can pull the recipes into menus. There are all kinds of tools, things if you want to set up a salad bar, all the guidelines around setting up a salad bar, things for administrators, like even job descriptions for when you're using Whole Foods. Lots of videos. We probably have 40 or 50 videos, training videos, how to cut something, you know, why you should not serve chocolate milk. I mean, all kinds of videos. So there's really great training tools as well as recipes, financial modeling tools, It's an amazing resource.
Now, in these 10 years that you've been involved with programs like this, are you seeing any difference in actual nutritional guidelines? You know, we spoke earlier about the importance of counting calories, which we both agree really isn't that key in what's going on here. But where do we stand with standards? And I guess a school has to adhere by a standard in order to get funding, I would imagine, is that part of the problem.
That's right. So all schools are under the National School Lunch Program. The National School Lunch Program is under the auspices of the USDA. The Child Nutrition Reauthorization has now tentatively or preliminarily passed both the House and the Senate, but the bills have to be married, and that may or may not happen by the end of September when the bill is due to sunset. So it has to be reauthorized, but it hasn't been yet. In both the House and the Senate bills, they have are promoting the Institute of Medicine guidelines. So the Institute of Medicine was hired by the USDA to come up with new guidelines, which would be much better. They're not the end-all and be-all, but they're way better than what we have now. So we can look forward to that if indeed we can get our House and Senate to pass a bill in the near future and then really adopt the Institute of Medicine guidelines sooner as opposed to later. The bill says they'll adopt in 3 to 5 years. I think they need to adopt immediately.
Yesterday.
Right, exactly. If it was your kid that was sick, and this is what I always feel like saying, if it was your kid that was sick, you know, would you say, oh, yeah, you know, they're not like that sick. We'll deal with that in 3 to 5 years. You're going to go, no, you know, we're going to deal with that now. But as a country, we don't seem able to do that.
Right. Is it a fair question to ask you what maybe are some of the specifics that we're talking about with the, what did you call it? The
Institute of Medicine. They put maximum calories, which there are now none. So even though we have minimum calories now, you could feed a kid 2,000 calories if you wanted. So it does that. It gives some pretty strict guidelines around sodium. It talks a lot about more fruits and vegetables and different colors in fruits and vegetables and how often you have to serve them and also whole grains. So it's really a huge step up from where we are now.
What, you know, if we're talking about minimum calories, I know my granddaughter, for instance, loves quinoa, you know, and she loves a simple grain that's pretty digestible and you can fill up on something like that pretty easily. Where does that, you know, if you have a portion of chicken nuggets, for instance, and then a portion of quinoa, how does that work calorie-wise? Do you feel like once you start feeding someone or these children more nutrient-dense food, it's harder to get the caloric amount?
Yeah. There is something to what you're saying. I mean, one of the reasons, it's interesting, a number of years ago, the USDA put in guidelines around fat, and you couldn't have more than 30 or 35% fat in school lunches. And what that did was great. It brought the fat content down for the schools that followed the guidelines anyhow, but it also brought the calories down. But because they didn't change their minimum calorie requirements and lower those as well, we found schools adding back dessert and things like chocolate milk because they had to add sugar back to meet the minimum calories. So it's really a conundrum around these minimum calories because if you do serve pretty much exclusively fresh foods, fresh vegetables, whole grains, healthy protein, no refined sugars and flours, and don't serve desserts or chocolate milk, all of which is how we work in Boulder, then it can be hard to hit those minimum calorie counts.
Now, what about the fats? The corn syrup, is that?
Well, corn syrup is a sugar, not a fat.
Okay, so what fats are you finding being used? Are you
in schools? Well, you know, most schools use just traditional, you know, vegetable fats. I mean, most schools don't have fryers anymore, although they serve food that's been pre-fried, you know, so you can just bake it. There is still a lot of vegetable fats used in schools, but not specifically something really healthy like olive oil, just regular vegetable. You know, you do see saturated fats, but that's mostly in prepared products. I mean, we do serve hamburgers, I think, once every 5 weeks. I mean, we don't serve them often in elementary schools. But there's not like a lot of saturated fats where they're frying French fries in lard or anything like that. You don't see a lot of that.
Does that get your ire up about the kinds of fats that are being used?
Well, I mean, it would certainly be better to have only healthy fats, But that's sort of the least of the problems. You know, you go back to what you can do for a dollar. You know, when you make the priority understanding that you have a dollar, you know, the way our system works, it's like, you know, you can't really talk much about organic. You know, you can't really talk much about local. I mean, our priority is to get away from processed foods. That's our first priority. And to do more scratch cooking and more fresh fruits and vegetables.
You mentioned earlier that schools that followed protocol, what are you seeing in that? Are there a lot of schools that just do their own thing and buy off the back of something that fell off a truck?
You don't really buy off the back of a truck, but the guidelines are so low that, you know, chicken nuggets, tater tots, all those things, popsicles, Pop-Tarts, and corn dogs are all allowed. Given that, you don't have to go very far to not meet the guidelines. I mean, to exceed the guidelines. But even then, a lot of schools end up serving more fat and more added trans fats than they should.
So when did you come to the Boulder Valley School District?
13 months ago.
Okay. So what...
Not very long.
No. What was the first thing that you saw that you wanted to do?
Well, before I actually became the director, my consulting company had spent the better part of a year here doing an assessment for the district that I was not involved in, but my consulting company, my partner, ran that. And through that, we came up with a strategic plan and a 3 or 5 year outline of how things would be done. So we knew before I took the job a lot of the things that needed to change. But before I came, the food was very typical of school food. Again, you know, chicken nuggets, corn dogs, you know, frozen waffles, things like that. So the first thing we wanted to do was start to remove the highly processed foods and start to bring in more fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, add salad bars, things like that.
And so how and what did you do? What did you actually add?
So we've changed the menu from those highly processed foods to a menu today that we have salad bars in every school. We serve organic Colorado milk at lunch and hormone and antibiotic free at breakfast. The majority of our grain is whole grains, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables all the time. We make a lot of things from scratch, whether it's pasta sauces or we make our own pizza in-house and we make our own pizza sauce. We make our own burritos in-house. We roast our own chicken in-house. You know, we're pretty much doing a lot of scratch cooking, and there are no more highly processed foods in the district.
And is that the way it is now in East Hampton as well? Have the programs that you've left been left standing strongly enough that they... I mean, I'm assuming these communities get it anyway. Otherwise, they never would have hired you.
Well,
but
East Hampton was a private school, but Berkeley, where I was for 4 years, yes, that program is really strong. It's sustainable. It's systemic. It's financially viable, and it's just moving right along.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like 4 years is a good amount of time for actually you to be in a community and set the program on a good path?
Well, I think that that's reasonable. It definitely depends on the community, where they're starting from, what their goals are. I mean, there's a lot that, you know, can weigh in here. But I think change takes a while. We didn't get to this moment in time with this obesity and diabetes overnight. We're not going to move away from it overnight either. So it certainly takes years to change, you know, a system.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it problematic when you got to Boulder? Did you find places of resistance? And I'm not looking for you to mention a particular person, of course, but I'm wondering what, if there was any resistance, what that might have been.
Boulder Valley represents 10 communities. It's not Boulder proper, but it's 10 communities. And within any community, you know, some people accept change faster and better than others. Some people believe that we should change school food, and some don't. Some people really want to change the way their kids are eating, and some people are happy with the way their kids are eating. So, yes, there's been some resistance. We have not been able to increase participation as quickly as we need to. And that means that although last year we did increase participation, how many kids were eating lunch over the year before, it was not as much as we'd hoped. And we're really looking this year, if we're going to make this program really work, we need more kids eating lunch every day. And we're feeding between 8,000 and 10,000 kids a day for lunch, but there's 30,000 kids in the district, and we really need to feed more of them in order to make the program sustainable.
Mm-hmm. What would you say to a parent why they might not want to make a box lunch for their kid every day?
Well, what I can say to the parents of the Boulder Valley community is the food we are making, and we are cooking in 5 production kitchens. We have trained chefs that work every night cooking the food for all the schools. What I can say is the food is delicious, it's healthy, it's not processed, and you should feel very, very comfortable having your kids eat it.
What is it about the overall, with all of the regulations, that absolutely just blows your mind?
I think that the thing that is the most distressing is all of the additives and chemicals that are allowed in food, and not just school food, but across the board. I mean, whether it's pesticides or herbicides, whether it's BPA, you know, whether it's this laundry list. You go to a grocery store and you look at the back of a package and there's this laundry list of 30 or more ingredients that, you know, no one can pronounce. No one knows what they are. They're not food. And, you know, it's funny around labels. I mean, we sort of teach kids to read labels, but we shouldn't have to teach kids to read labels because, listen, there's not labels on real food. When was the last time you saw an apple with a nutritional label on it? So it's very difficult. The USDA, I think, is drug in a number of different ways. I think there's a lot of conflict of interest between big business and the lobbying groups and what really we should be eating. So I think it's a very difficult situation.
Do you see any signs regarding the lobbyists and, you know, what the corn industry is trying to feed us so we'll continue to have high fructose corn syrup in our foods? I think it must be breaking down at this point. It must be showing signs. I don't know, and you're closer to this certainly than I am, but
I don't know. The big business seems to still be very powerful, but we do see signs. I mean, Monsanto with some of their GMO products had a potato that was GMO to get rid of potato beetles. And because a lot of families, moms and dads, said they didn't want their kids to eat those potatoes, which were being grown almost exclusively for McDonald's and Burger King, McDonald's and Burger King eventually said, we're not going to buy those, and it went away. So there's, you know, consumers are very, very powerful. And I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of discussion around the GMO beets right now. And a lot of people who don't want high fructose corn syrup or don't want added trans fats. Trans fats are being banned in a lot of cities now. So I think, I'm hopeful that we'll see change, but it's very slow.
Yes, indeed. What if you were to move today to some small town in Alabama or Mississippi? What would you do besides cry for the first 24 hours?
If I moved there to try and fix their school food?
Yes.
Well, I should first say that I only go into communities where there's a lot of support to make these changes. And I would imagine even in all over the country, you know, there is support to make these changes. But what you need to do is, no matter what kind of community you go into, you have to assess where they are and their level of readiness to make change. I mean, whether it's, do they have equipment? Do they have trained staff? Do they have a procurement system? Do they have a procurement pipeline? I mean, what are the issues? And then you do a feasibility study and you do a timeline and you just start one, you know, it's just like baby step after baby step after baby step. So it's the same no matter where you go. You just have to figure out where you are, what your resources are, and how you're going to make change.
What kind of response, specifically speaking, have you gotten, for instance, with the Lunchbox program? What's come out of left field that just makes you so excited?
Well, what's really exciting is how many people are starting to show interest, how many hits we're getting on the site, how many people are starting to use the tools. But it's all brand new. The site's only been out of beta since the beginning of August. So a lot of this is really new. So, you know, have me back on the show 6 months from now and we'll have all kinds of stories, but it's still really just in its infancy.
But the fact that it's getting so many hits is fantastic.
I know. And we haven't even done any PR on it yet, but we will.
Well, hopefully we're doing a little bit right now.
Yes, that's true.
Now, do you see your efforts being more like baby steps, or do you see like you've been able to actually make some real giant steps in any particular direction from within the whole system that you're doing and using?
Well, I think in Berkeley and Boulder, we've made real, real huge strides. But I think for the general public and also for school districts, the, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of school districts across the country, they need to start by taking baby steps. I mean, most school districts are not going to do wholesale change. It's really hard. It's complicated, and it can be expensive. So I think the ability to give people tools to pick and choose what tools they use and what changes they make in what order is very, very useful. And I am very supportive of small incremental change. I think that that's how most systems are really changed.
Sure. Now, Anne, I know you've written 4 books. Are they, is there one you would point a parent to reading? And then maybe if someone from a school district came, is there one you would point them to reading?
The one that really equates to this work is Lunch Lessons, and it's written for both audiences, both parents and administrators. It's 4 years old now, so really the information that's on our website and the information that we're putting out through the lunchbox.org and saladbarproject.org and chefanne.com, that's really where the most current information is, and it's really broken down by audiences, so information for parents and advocates and administrators.
Right. What's your favorite recipe that the school district has right now?
You know, we worked really hard on pizza, and people are going to say, oh, pizza's not healthy, but you know what, pizza can be healthy, and it is something kids eat, and we certainly don't serve it every day. We serve it once a week, but we worked really hard to get a pizza that was healthy, that the kids would like, that would taste good, and we got so much positive feedback from pizza. Today is mac and cheese day. We only serve mac and cheese once every 5 weeks, but I am going to go to a school for lunch today and see how we did with mac and cheese. It's a healthy mac and cheese. It's made with much less fat than typical mac and cheese, and we're making it from scratch. No Kraft additives or colors or dyes or anything. So,
right. I think we had, I think my favorite school lunch, which I really rarely ate, was English muffin pizza when I was growing up. I'm sure the cheese was not really cheese in the strictest definition of the word at all. So I know it was probably a shock in a way, although it was a gradual one, that, you know, at a time you were a 5-star chef working in various restaurants, and then eventually you found yourself in a school lunch program, which I'm sure maybe in the early 80s you never would have dreamed of. What can you see in 5 years from now, perhaps? Or 10?
You know, I really hope that in 5 or 10 years I am spending my time working on my foundation, working at the national level in collaboration with the government, perhaps, really trying to make changes for all kids all over the country. And I really hope I'm playing more.
I wish that for you as well. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
Anne Cooper, Nutrition Services Director for the Boulder Valley School District. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.org. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.